From the Lend Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of December, 2025. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net. We'll hear from this morning's press conference at the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, where the Chekhov-funded associations in the state, Pork Producers, Soybean Association, and the Corn Growers all came together to make an 11,000-pound donation of ground pork for the winter holidaying season. In fact, they're making that donation to eight food banks across the state, more than 100,000 pounds of ground pork. And then we'll turn our attention to Frayne Olson. He is with North Dakota State University Extension. We won't talk exactly about the marketplace today, but we will delve deeply into policy and trade issues, and we'll do that right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org, where right now you can sign up still for the Farm Assets Conference to be held in Bloomington Friday. It's an all-day event. Registration online at WILLAG.org, or for the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. They're coming up next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in DeKalb, Peoria, and Mount Vernon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.44. It was a penny lower on the afternoon. The May contract for the day at $4.51.5, the settlement price there down one. And December corn at $4.63.75, a quarter lower. January beans at $10.93.75, down 11.5 cents. The March at $11.05, down 10.25. And new crop November 2.5 lower at $11.05. Bean meal futures at $3.06.30, down $1.10. The bean oil, 51 cents lower at 51.18. Soft red winter wheat in the March contract at 534.75, down one. The hard red winter March down 4.75 at 526.5. Live cattle futures, 47.5 cents lower. Feeders down $3.40. And lean hogs per 100 pounds, up 12.5 cents. They finished at $82.40 per 100 pounds again. Crude oil at $58.82 a barrel, down $1.26. And the wholesale price of gasoline, up 3.8 cents at $1.79.5. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He is with agmarket.net to take a look at these numbers. Hi, Kurt. Thanks for being with us again today.
Well, Todd, glad to be here again. Thank you.
Why is it that soybeans were off 10 to 11 cents for the day?
Just a combination of factors all coming together here. Not real heavy volume, but we're seeing some favorable weather forecasts for the southern hemisphere, particularly Brazil. Argentina is a little bit on the dry side, off and on. When you look at the big picture, they're just getting started as they move into their growing season. They're fairly well planted in the north, still wrapping up some planting in the southern part of the region. So we're just seeing no real weather concerns there. Once the calendar turns 2026, it might be a different story, but there's no urgency there at the moment. The other factor is basically we did sell 132,000 tons of beans to China, but we're just not seeing those huge amounts. And with media reporting that this 12 million metric ton might not be fully complete, or they have till end of February to do that. So there's just no real big demand outside of that 12 million metric tons. And plus, too, we start getting past the first year, they start booking the southern hemisphere. Southern hemisphere is cheaper than U.S. beans now. So even though we might pick up some Chinese business, we might lose some business from these other countries that we picked up here over the last 8 months or so. Also, too, probably the biggest thorn in the side is the technical picture. We moved $11. The enthusiasm was there. We're going to keep moving higher since we moved above $11. And yeah, we did there for a little while, and all of a sudden, Bush, we kind of run out of gas in here. Just cleared that, 1165 area, then back down. Closing below $11 now is a sign that we could probably drift back into that gap area down in that 1060, 1070 area. So just all these little things coming together here just has the trade on the defensive here, Todd.
Are your expectations that USDA tomorrow during its World Ag Supply and Demand Estimate will make very many changes to those tables?
Yeah, that's interesting. Traditionally, December is not a big market mover or changer for the most part. Now, that being said, we'll be blindsided by something. But the ag market team has come in here and basically left all numbers unchanged from last month. So we'll see what we have. I think most of the trade's eager to see what the January report's going to produce. But for the most part here, we're just unchanged from last month. The South American crop, there's ideas maybe that could be moved a little bit. But for the most part, we're still just kind of early in their growing season, too. So looking at corn stocks, 2.154. Bean ending stocks, 290. Wheat stocks, 901. Now, when you look at the world numbers, basically unchanged, 281 on corn, 122 on the beans, and 271 metric tons on the wheat. So we'll see where it comes in.
Turn your attention to the livestock for a bit. Beef cattle have been on a bit of a roller coaster. What can you tell me about that marketplace today?
Oh, boy. Straight up, straight down, straight right back up. Fundamentally, we're still looking at some tight numbers. We're still seeing a situation where beef demand's robust. Every once in a while, we'll hear some talk about the Mexican border. We'll hear talk about meat tariffs, particularly South American tariffs, and it'll move the market a little bit. But for the most part, we're still looking at a tight situation. Until we open up that Mexican border, I think things are going to stay firm here for a little while. We're basically back in the consolidation pattern on the fats that we were here October, November. We'll probably run into a little bit of resistance here. Feeders are trying to get up here, particularly in the January, and fill that chart gap. So we'll see how it unfolds. There's going to be some resistance in that chart gap. The biggest surprise is hams. Traditionally, hams move higher until now. But actually, since August, they've been moving lower. The retail or wholesale on hams. And so I think we're in a situation here, Todd. You might want to go out and buy a big old ham for Christmas.
Indeed. Hey, thanks much. We appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That's Kirk Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org. Do visit our website or the Farm Doc Daily website, either one, and you can sign up still for the Farm Assets Conference that's coming up Friday of this week in Bloomington at the Agri Center. We have a great day-long event scheduled for you, including the crop scientist and the ag economist at the University of Illinois, and a whole series of other folks, a couple of ag engineers, and the leadership from the U of I in the Ag College. You'll want to make sure you get yourself scheduled for that one, and if not it, or in addition to the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Those are the following week or next week on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in DeKalb, East Peoria, and then Mount Vernon. I will be traveling with the Farm Doc team for these half-day events. The cost for the Farm Assets Conference or the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, including your noon meal and all the materials, is just $80. You should join and follow along all day long at the Farm Assets Conference or the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. I know your bankers and others will be in the audience. You as a farmer should be too. Again, sign up right now at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. Associations are donating ground pork to food banks. Illinois pork producers are donating over 100,000 pounds of ground pork to food banks this holiday season. Funding for the annual push is made possible by the Illinois Farm to Food Bank program. It is a state initiative that connects farmers with food banks to provide fresh, local food to those in need. Mike Haig sits on the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and he's a farmer from Pontiac, also a pork producer. I asked him about the importance of this pork power donation.
East Central Illinois, I think all the food banks across Illinois are receiving 11,000 pounds of pork this year from the Pork Power Program. I think 100,000 pounds overall donated from the pork producers in Illinois corn and Illinois soybeans that is going to be used throughout the state to help meet this increased demand from the neighbors needing these extremely valuable protein items.
This is one of the biggest donations you've ever made?
It's the largest one we've ever made.
And it's going to 8 different food banks across the state?
8 different food banks across the state, at least 11,000 pounds for each one.
And what difference does it make in those communities, do you suppose?
From my local perspective, I'm actually run a food bank in Pontiac, Illinois, and the need for whole for protein and meat is just huge. That's what they come looking for, is just those protein items. So I think it's going to really be beneficial all the way through. All I think there's 18 counties now that Eastern Illinois Food Bank feeds into. So
Mike Haig is a pork producer and sits on the board of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. IPPA is working with Feeding Illinois and members of the Illinois Corn Growers Association, Illinois Meat Processors Association, and the Illinois Soybean Checkoff programs to make the distributions. Ground pork will be delivered to 8 food banks across the state, including the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, Central Illinois Food Bank, St. Louis Area Food Bank, Northern Illinois Food Bank, Midwest Food Bank, Greater Chicago Food Bank, the River Bend Food Bank, and the Tri-State Food Bank. We're now joined by Frayne Olson, agricultural economist at North Dakota State University with Extension there. Hello, Frayne. Thank you very much. You and I had a conversation about a book you read, written by Robert Lighthizer. He was the U.S. Trade Representative during the first Trump administration. And that discussion centered around translation and how very important it is, particularly when dealing with the Chinese. Can you tell me about your assessment of the book and what you learned from it?
Yeah, it was actually fairly interesting, because one of the things that Mr. Lighthizer did was he kind of recounted some of those stories and some of the discussions that went on, especially during that phase one agreement that was signed between the United States and China to try and put an end to the first trade war. And one of the things that he brought up very specifically was the initial the negotiations was, for convenience, was prepared in English. And then once that was, you know, completed, then that agreement was then translated into Chinese. And one of the things that Mr. Lighthizer spent some time talking about was they really, once that translation was completed, the folks in the U.S. really went through that Chinese translation with a fine-tooth comb, because not all of the words that were used in the English version were directly translated into Chinese, because the use of terminology is slightly different. And so some of those phrases that were initially like very thou shalt were translated into terms that were more flexible or less less concrete. And so they spent some time even later on working on the exact Chinese translation to make sure that the Chinese words that were used in the contract represented what was shown in the U.S. contract. And so I suspect some of those translation differences were also came out in this framework agreement that was proposed between the United States and China in our current trade relations.
Yeah, so thou shalt got transitioned maybe to we'll try.
Yeah, we'll try.
we'll try. And then in this recent round, it clearly the translation is about calendar years and about marketing years, and they just mean different things in both countries.
Yes, because the New Year's celebrations in China has a different time or clock schedule than they do here in the United States or even Europe. And so, you know, when we think about calendar years, you have to be, whose calendar are we using? Is it going to be the Chinese calendar? Is it going to be the U.S. calendar? You know, so there can be, and when we think about translations and those, what you know, as an outsider looking in, seems to be obvious. But when you're in the heat of the moment, you're trying to get some agreement and you're trying to actually negotiate some very important economic terms, you know, sometimes those get overlooked. And you know, I'm not blaming anybody, obviously, for this, but it's very easy to kind of overlook this timing differential. And I do suspect some of that happened when the framework agreement was first discussed.
Yeah, so the speed at which this moved, which under the Trump administration has generally been really fast, days or maybe a week or two, rather than months or years with most trade negotiations, makes a huge difference, I suppose, over time.
It really does. And again, you know, when President Trump and President Xi first met and discussed, they were, you know, again, President Trump used the term, it's a framework agreement. So the two leaders got together, they agreed in kind of in principle, this is the way we want things to work. They agreed on what this should look like, and then obviously handed it off to some of their staff and to work out the specific details to get all of the you know, kind of the I's dotted and T's crossed for a formal agreement. And it's probably in that process then that some of this translation or some of this misunderstanding may have occurred. And so it's now becoming pretty clear from both the US side as well as the Chinese side that, you know, the purchases that China was trying to get by the end of the year, air quotes year, looks like it'll be the end of February instead of the end of December. So that does give the Chinese a little bit longer window to be able to purchase U.S. soybeans and to be able to meet the agreement.
One last question on the formalization of these trade negotiations. An agreement could be signed. What difference does it make that it's not approved by Congress?
Okay, so that's one of these issues that's now actually the Supreme Court is reviewing. So there's this IEPA. It's the international. It's one of the I forget the exact title for it, but it's one of those provisions that Congress has given the president, some authority that the Congress has given president to unilaterally come in and make, either put on tariffs or to negotiate some kind of trade agreement. And usually there has to be some kind of economic emergency. And of course, the question now with the reciprocal tariffs, the ones that President Trump had announced to basically all countries across the globe, was did he overextend the boundaries? Did he misinterpret or extend the boundaries of that particular clause beyond what was intended by Congress? And of course, it's worked its way through the court system. The Supreme Court has heard arguments of that. They have not provided any kind of ruling yet. We're still waiting to hear what that might look like. But that obviously could put a significant change or make some additions or adaptation to some of the negotiations that are still ongoing. I think my understanding is that, again, I'm not the legal expert, but my understanding is the contracts or the agreements that have been signed are still valid. It would be the ones that are still under negotiation that could be challenging.
Yeah, so IEPA stands for the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. The Supreme Court is in the midst of reviewing that, and we will have a decision from them at some point in the not-too-distant future, I suppose. Also, the negotiations, if a tariff is put in negotiations, that's considered binding and legal. I had not heard about the differentiation between those that have been agreed to and signed and those that may be agreed to and signed. And it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. I do have a follow-up question based on our discussion so far. When you look forward, and we're talking about soybeans and China trying to purchase them from the United States, why would they do so when they might be able to buy them cheaper from Brazil?
Well, okay, so there's a couple possibilities. One of them is, and it may not be large volumes, but in international trade, it is common for, let's say, a company or a country to purchase from a U.S. company or one of the international grain trading companies, and to say, look, give us your best bid for soybeans delivered to my port on in this particular date range. We don't really care where it comes from, so it's called optional origin, which means it could be from the USPNW, it could be a US Gulf, it could be Brazil Santos, or it could be the Argentine River, and just say, look, you figure out what makes the most sense, but give us your best bid. And so optional origin, they could have originally bid it thinking, well, we'll probably pull out of Brazil, but now it sounds like we may be able to pull out of the U.S. instead. So that's a possibility. I don't think there's 12 million metric ton of those kinds of contracts out there, but it might be a difference. It might make some of the difference. The other possibility is that because the trade negotiations covered a really broad range of very big economic issues like rare earth metals and technology and computer chips, as well as port fees and a bunch of other things, that in this discussion the Chinese said, well, we're willing to concede and purchase some additional soybeans, even though they might be a little bit more expensive, to be able to get some concessions on the other side of that. So that's a possibility, saying, well, you know, this is part of the negotiation. You give a little bit, I'll give a little bit. We'll come to some kind of a compromise. And then the final one is it is possible, and I know some people in the marketplace have been asking this question, that the Chinese government, through the form of Sinograin, which is really the organization, the entity within China that manages their government-owned inventories, that one of the ways that they're going to try and kind of maximize the political pressure was to be able to take some of their soybeans out of government-owned reserve and use them to try and supplement some of the soybeans that were needed during these negotiations to try and prove that, look, China doesn't have to buy U.S. soybeans. And if that was the case, that Sinograin may come back into the marketplace then and purchase some U.S. soybeans to be able to refill some of these government-owned reserves. So it's not something that necessarily a private company in China or a private crushing company in China would have to bear the cost for, but it is something then that the Chinese government could come in and say, okay, we're willing to pay a little bit higher price for U.S. soybeans to be able to meet our commitments, but then also to refill some of our government-owned inventories.
Thank you so much. I appreciate all the explanations.
All right. Well, it's always a pleasure visiting.
That's Fran Olson, an agricultural economist at North Dakota State University and with Extension, located in Fargo. He joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Visit our website, willag.org, where you can still sign up for this Friday's Farm Assets Conference and next week's Illinois Farm Economics Summits. That second one is a little smaller in there, but there is an IFAS webpage link. We'll be at the Agri Center Friday in Bloomington and then in DeKalb on Monday with the IFAS or Illinois Farm Economics Summits. The Farm Doc team and I will travel then to Peoria for Tuesday, and Wednesday we'll be in Mount Vernon. Be sure to get yourself registered today. Time is quickly running out. You have a good afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.